I think we would all agree that Elijah had a stressful job. It was not an easy one, in constant danger. He had to go and face King Ahab whenever God told him to do so, a king who could take his life. But Ahab, you know, was a little bit afraid of Elijah. Maybe there deep down was this hesitancy, this fear of the Lord, the true God of Israel. Even though he had acquiesced to his wife and the gods of Baal. Nevertheless, Elijah had a stressful life, and we all know what stress can do to you, you know? It can cause all kinds of medical problems, heart disease, you know, various gastrointestinal problems. It can cause obesity. It can affect our allergies. It can do all sorts of things. Elijah had reason to want to get his stress under control. But that wasn't the reason that he ran. It wasn't because he was afraid of a heart attack. It was because he was afraid of losing his head, literally. Because Ahab told Jezebel, and Jezebel did not have any hesitation in seeking the life of Ahab. She says, I don't care about your parlor tricks, or you were just lucky with that lightning. By this time tomorrow, you're going to you are a dead man walking. You're going to be dead by this time tomorrow. And so he ran. He ran straight south, ran into the land of Judah, which hopefully would be beyond the reach of Jezebel or whomever she would send. He came to this place, Beersheba. He left his servant there, and he went on straight south into the wilderness, into the desert, this desolate land, hardly a bush scrub of anything. And he finally reaches a broom tree, a solitary broom tree, it says, and he laid down and prepared to die. He prays to God, take my life. It's enough. Elijah's at the end of his rope. He's lost hope. Maybe it was because he had hoped that this final match with the prophets of Baal would establish the truth of who was the real God. And he had failed ultimately. The heart of the nation wasn't changed. Jezebel was still in power. Ahab was still in power. He had lost everything. That's the way life works sometimes. Have you ever had a moment when you were at the end of your rope, when it seemed you didn't know which way to turn, where the future was dark, where the hopes and dreams that you had for the future were very questionable, where you did not know whether you had the energy to go on? I think it is interesting that the first thing that happens to Elijah is, as Emily shared with the children this morning, is he lays down under that broom tree, confesses his frustration, and he falls asleep. You know, God knows we are physical beings. We do need our rest. Things do look better after we have rested and had a chance to physically recover from whatever it is we are going through. He is given food and water. and then he goes to sleep again. And he is awakened once again. Eat and drink. Because the journey is ahead of you, and you need your strength for the journey. What journey is this angel talking about? And then we see that Elijah has not just been running from Jezebel. He is heading straight south, straight for the mountain of God, for Mount Horeb, for the place where the faith of Israel was confirmed, the place where the covenant of Israel through Moses was given, the place of the Ten Commandments, the place where the power of God had been demonstrated in fire and in storm, where all of Israel had seen this. And so he goes. Interestingly, it says he goes 40 days and 40 nights, just as the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness 40 days and 40 nights. And he arrives there at Mount Horeb, and he goes to a cave. Actually, it literally says in Hebrew, the cave, implying it's the place where Moses went, literally the place where God revealed himself to Moses. This is what's intended. And the question's asked once again, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he responds as he has earlier, because all of Israel has forsaken your covenant. They've killed all the prophets. I alone am left, and they seek my life to take it away. And the response to that is that he is told to go to the mouth of the cave. And there is a great storm. There's a great wind, a powerful wind, but God's not in the wind. After that, there's a great earthquake, but God isn't in the earthquake. There's a great fire, but God is not in the fire. This is not what Elijah has been looking for. Not the God of power. Not the God who perhaps Elijah was expecting to do something like a second parting of the seas or whatever, as he fed the people with manna in the desert. Maybe he's going to do something. Maybe he's going to carry Elijah back to face Ahab and Jezebel and bring fire from heaven to destroy them all. Elijah is looking for the power of God. But after all this, then there is the sound of sheer silence, as this translation has it, the Old English version was a still small voice. There is quietness. And then God speaks to him and asks once again, why are you here? And he recites again how zealous he has been for God, how he's done all that he could. Israel has not listened. They've forsaken the covenant. He alone's left. He alone. God does not respond by carrying him back to face Elijah. He simply says, go back. Go back. Anoint Hazael, king of Aram. Anoint Jehu, king of Israel. And anoint Elisha as your successor. That's the answer. And Elijah responds. He goes back. And God also says to him, by the way, you're not alone. I've got 7,000 people back there who have not bowed the knee to Baal. What is this all about? I think that what Elijah finds is confirmation of the power, the might of God. But he also sees God in a new light. It's not the God that is just bent on destruction of all the enemies. It is the God who is seeking through the events of the world, through history, to redeem his people. Yes, God is the God of Israel and is a blessing to Israel, but he is a blessing to them so that he can be a blessing to all the world. One of the kings that Elijah is called to anoint is the king of Aram. This is a foreign king. This is an enemy king. But he is showing Elijah that he is working through all of the events of the world to accomplish his purpose. Be faithful, he's saying to Elijah. I will be with you. I am going with you. I am preparing the way before you. I am preparing also for the time when you will not be able to continue, for the one who will follow you. Go and anoint Elisha as well. You will be his mentor. You will be his guide. And the time will come when he will continue this ongoing work of mine in the world. We lose heart. But the God of creation, the God who is working God's purpose out in this world, is with us. That's the promise of this text. Through it all, we cannot see the way that is before us. We don't have a roadmap into the future, but we are called to trust in the power of God and in the presence of God and in the love of God. And we are to remember that we are never alone, that we have brothers and sisters here, people of faith, and we are called to nurture one another, care for one another, encourage one another, and to work together with one another in accomplishing what God seeks to do in the world. You know, fortuitously, I did not select that response to the prayer of confession this morning. I think Jason did it. Thank you for that. Justin did it. But it's so appropriate. The third verse of Amazing Grace, through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. His grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. That's the way God works. He brings subtle words to us in life, subtle hints, subtle guidance. Sometimes it's clear, sometimes it's not so clear, but God is with us, calling us in faith to stretch out our lives, to trust, to be faithful, and allow God to lead us to the kingdom, to lead us home. Amen.